Welcome back in. Final hour of Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, and Ryan Porth here with you on this snowy Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking about the Titans and their loss to the Ravens on Wild Card Weekend. Their season is now over. Also, Predator season about to get kicked off. And to help us talk about all that, we bring in my man Darren McFarland, host of Darren, Donick, and Chase, also host of the Predators pregame and postgame show here on the Nashville Predators Radio Network. Darren, what's going on, my man? How we doing?
Good morning, Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode. It is snowing really hard down here in Rutherford County. It looks awesome when you don't have to drive. It looks awesome.
Very scenic view outside.
When you could just sit here and talk to you gentlemen and just watch the snow come down and down right here in Smyrna. It's awesome.
It's just very comforting to know that you have this view while you're on the line with us here. And, Darren, we just appreciate the work that you do. Let's start with the Titans yesterday. And, obviously, look, I mean, I think a lot of fans, just based on the reaction that I've seen, knew that this team had an expiration date on them at some point based on how up and down they've been since Taylor Lewan went out and the defense and how they've struggled all season long. Defense, actually, you know, if you'd told me yesterday that they would have held that Ravens offense to 20 points, I really like the Titans' chances heading into the game. But as you look at that and just the picture as a whole, what was the most disappointing part to you about the loss for the Titans yesterday against the Ravens?
Well, I think it's where you're going with this, right? We all suspected we knew how the script ended. We knew the script was probably going to end sooner rather than later than last year, right? We kind of had a feeling, and a run to the AFC Championship game probably wasn't happening with the way this team has played the season out, yet they won 11 games, yet they were division champ. But you just looked at the defense and said, it's just not good enough. In fact, it's in some categories, it's historically bad. So that's just not good enough to make a deep playoff run. But when you think about them having an early exit in wild card weekend, or is it super wild card weekend because we had triple headers on both days, you didn't expect it to play out with the offense scoring 13 points and the offense being as inept as they were after grabbing a 10-0 lead and dominating through the first quarter of play. I mean, I just don't think anybody saw the script being the offense let them down. I mean, hell, for the defense, this is like MVP. This is like Hall of Fame stuff. Them holding anybody, forget the Ravens, to 20 points, right? I mean, put them all in the hall, give them gold jackets today and say, holy crap, you did above and beyond of what anybody expected, and yet it was the offense that so many times this year won them games left and right. If it wasn't for their offense, they had no chance. This is a 5-11 team instead of 11-5 if they don't have the offense that produced the way that they did this year. So I guess that's the surprise. I thought that the Ravens were going to win. Unfortunately, I had a bad feeling all week about it. I predicted the Ravens to win on Friday. I predicted the Ravens to win all week. And unfortunately, it happened. It's just not the way any of us thought it was going to happen.
How surprised were you that Mike Vrabel punted on that 4th-and-2? Darren, how big of a deal do you think that sequence was in the final result?
Joe, I am never surprised by anything Mike Vrabel does. So, I mean, I'm surprised when he goes for it on 4th-and-11. I'm surprised when he doesn't go for it on 4th-and-2. I mean, he's all over the place with some of these. I mean, we've seen it for 3 years. So I've learned not to be surprised anymore. I can't figure him out at times. I can't figure out his mindset. You know, there for a while, it was all about player mentality. Like, you go for it, just whatever it is, go for it. You know, we don't need no stinking field goals. We don't need to punt. Go for everything. Just player mentality. And I'm like, man, you're a head coach now. And then he's had games where he's totally backed off that mentality. And it's like, what are you doing? Like, 4th-and-2 from the 40, like, now you're not going for it? So I guess I've stopped being surprised by what Mike Vrabel does. But, I mean, you can't argue with his success. I mean, I've never thought a team could do what they've done the last 2 years with the deficiencies that they've had. I mean, basically, they just chuck the kicker position last year to the side and said, we don't even need a kicker. Like, we're just going to keep winning games and not even use a kicker or even an attempt a field goal. I didn't think that was possible, yet they made a run to the AFC Championship game. I didn't think it was possible to have this historically bad of a defense where you could – by the way, 9 sacks in the last 2 weeks. So you had 15 sacks through 15 weeks. That's – let's see, Kentucky math, hold on. That's a sack a game on average. And then you have 9 in the final 2 weeks. How does that happen, and where was that the first 15 weeks that you could ever win 11 games in the National Football League and win a division title with that defense? But they have. So it's really hard to question a lot of what Mike Vrabel does. He's very stubborn. He's going to do it his way. And I'll be very curious to see what a stubborn guy that wants to do it his way and show everybody wrong, what he does with the defensive coordinator position in the offseason.
Darren McFarland, host of Darren, Donick, and Chase, on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. And Darren, we've talked about Corey Davis and maybe what his future looks like here with the Titans, and largely a really good season for Corey Davis, obviously a career year, and he's not ever going to be the guy that I think justifies the fifth overall pick. But a nice and productive season for Corey Davis this year. In the last 3 weeks, he's kind of gone MIA, and we don't know exactly what happened from a health standpoint yesterday. So no light shed on that so far from the Titans and Mike Vrabel. But as you look at the season that he had, how much money he could get on the open market, what do you think the future looks like for Corey Davis? Is it a part of the Titans? Is he elsewhere this time next year?
I love, Robbie, to play general manager on the radio. I love to. I like to pick my spots, though. There's certain times when I don't want to play general manager. Like right now, like David Poyle and the Predators, like trying to make these decisions of you know, your roster and what you're going to do with these. I don't want to play general manager right now on that side. I mean, I like to do other things, play general manager, but not just, picking the rosters and where everybody should be and what you should do there. Same thing goes for John Robinson. I like to play general manager on that side, too. It's just now that that question's been asked, I don't really want to play general manager because I don't know how you – what's rank and file of Jonnu Smith, Corey Davis, Jayon Brown. What's the market going to bear? I'm only willing to go certain numbers for guys. Would I like everybody to return? Yes. But at certain prices, I mean, when I hear – you know, Corey Davis and Jonnu Smith, what they could possibly make, I get a little squeamish. I'm not sure that I'm as interested in bringing them back at those prices. I'm interested at certain prices. If John Robinson can get the right prices, they should be brought back. But I don't think you should overpay for them. I don't know how you guys feel about that, but that's just my two cents. Like I said, this is the time when I don't like to play general manager.
Yeah, well, and obviously they're gonna be facing tough choices, Darren. I mean, there's no doubt about it. And usually someone does want to overpay or pay more, if not overpay, pay more than you want to pay, right? So well, let's take it to the draft then without knowing how everything works out. Do you think this team is, you know, a good draft away from being right back to the point where maybe they can make a run in the postseason? How far away do you think they are in terms of, you know, just some additions that can help you out after what we all know was an offseason of really nothing that helped them out?
Yeah, I was going to say, isn't that tough to say out loud, right? Because you go, a good draft away. Oh, yeah, this is past draft basically produced virtually nothing for this roster, right? I mean, that's the other thing. To add that to the list of 11 games and winning a division title, your draft picks and your offseason moves basically did nothing for this roster. Nothing. And you still won 11 games and a division title. I mean, can a good draft pick? Yeah, a draft pick that shows up and actually plays and isn't hurt and isn't off doing stupid stuff away from the field. Yeah, that would be fantastic and welcoming here in Nashville. Last offseason was a brutal, brutal miss for John Robinson. All the good that he's done, that was a whole lot of bad when you think about Beasley and Clowney and the draft picks or lack of. So can they massively improve? And they still won 11 games in a division title. So to answer your question, Joe, if those things work this go around, how do they not get better? I mean, it would be hard to answer that they would get worse considering what I just said.
Darren McFarland, host of Darren, Donick, and Chase, also does the pregame and postgame duties on the Nashville Predators Radio Network, on with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. And Darren, switching gears to the Nashville Predators, it's hard to believe that the puck is dropping on Thursday night for real, and the real thing gets going, a 56-game regular season. What are you looking forward to the most about this season for the Predators in terms of the number one thing you're looking for of how they play, the way they go about approaching this season from a mentality standpoint that they've talked about all offseason long with this group?
Well, that is it. I mean, we're going to find out on Thursday night against Columbus. It's going to be weird in just the fact that you better read up on Carolina and Chicago and Detroit, or is it Detroit, Columbus and Florida and Tampa, right? I mean, that's it. It's going to be in twos, and it's going to be your division. That's just going to be weird where you – yeah, obviously we're going to still, you know, peek around at other divisions and see what everybody else is doing. But for the most part, you don't have to look at them, worry about them, because the Predators aren't going to see them in the regular season. You're just going to see the division. Now, what do I want to see, Robbie? What did I take from the two scrimmages that we watched in person Friday night and last night? I did see that mentality, albeit in the scrimmages where, you know, it's scrimmages. I mean, let's just take it for what it is. You're not hitting. It's not real game action. You know, you had one-minute penalties. But did I see a mentality that David Poile has talked about and John Hines has talked about a ton? Yes, I did. Now, does that translate in the regular season? I don't know. We're about to find out. Did it translate in the two scrimmages? Yes. I thought there was grit. I thought there were guys going to dirty areas. I thought there were guys hovering around the net. I saw a presence, a different mentality. I saw that first line buzzing for two nights. I mean, picked up where they left off on the return to play in those four games. The first line, and let's not sugarcoat it, the first line's got to be that way. They just do. Is that pressure? Yeah, well, you're the first line. You got the big contracts, and you have the pressure. You're supposed to produce. That's part of it. That's what you signed up for when you signed that big contract, or in this case, big contracts, Forsberg and Arvidsson and Johansson. They have to produce. Did they look good Friday and last night? Yes. They stood out big time. Did some of the new guys stand out big time? Yes. Nick Cousins looks good. I like him. I really do. Luke Cunningham looks good. I like him. I'm going to call them for now until you guys tell me to stop it or nobody else wants to call that. It's just early on. It's trial and error. It's a trial balloon. The Killer Bees, that third defensive pairing, I like a lot. I really do. Once again, not trying to get too excited over two scrimmages, but it looks different than the third D pairing the last couple of seasons. I can tell you that. So I just want to see if this stuff translates. I like Trennan. I think Trennan's going to be on this roster. Did Tolvanen do enough to at least start out on the opening day roster on Thursday? I don't know. These are some of the tough choices again. But I saw that mentality in place, yes, in a scrimmage against themselves, but it just looked different than, you know, what John Hines was talking about until they stopped things in mid-March and what he kept talking about on the return to play, the mentality that you have to have, and I saw it for two scrimmages.
Darren, what's your confidence level going back to that top line that Ryan Johansson in particular will have the necessary intensity nightly that he needs in the regular season that he didn't have last regular season, but obviously flipped the switch and was so good in the postseason?
I mean, that is the question, right, Joe? I mean, that's what everybody wants. I mean, Matt Duchene, we have to throw him in there. He didn't suit up and play on Friday night. He did suit up and play last night. Played for both teams, by the way, which is pretty smart. I think Roman Josi and Matt Duchene, pretty smart and veteran moves last night. Play for both teams. Guarantee yourself a victory. I mean, that's the way I would do it if I had a choice. But Matt Duchene looked good. I mean, he did. He looked good. He had a goal last night. Nice shot from the left circle, top shelf, through traffic. Hal Gill described it perfectly last night in postgame. You could feel it coming. I mean, Matt Duchene was working hard on that shift. He was right. You could feel that goal building, and it happened. There's a lot of pressure on those guys. There's no doubt. That top line that you mentioned, Ryan Johansson that you mentioned, but let's not forget Matt Duchene. Those are the top two centermen, and those two lines, and those guys in the middle, Johansson and Duchene, they have to be the straw, right? They have to stir the drink. They've got to be the blood and guts of those lines, and that means you've got to bring the right mentality night in and night out. That's what John Hines, their head coach, has been preaching. We'll see if they can do it for 56 games and hopefully beyond.
Darren McFarland, host of Darren Donick and Chase, also handles the pre- and post-game duties on the Nashville Predators Radio Network, has been our guest here on Robbie and Retro. Darren, great stuff, my man. We're looking forward to listening to you at 10 o'clock.
Thank you, guys. Joe, your Lions are on the clock now, man. The Browns and the Bills both won a playoff game, 1994 and 95. Now your Lions are on the clock. I'm just saying.
They are not my Lions, but you're right there on the clock. Lions and Bengals, the only two teams to not win one in this century.
That's right. Okay.
That's right. Darren, appreciate you, my man.
All right. Thank you, Robbie.
When we come back, we'll dive back into the Titans, and we'll get into a little of the coaching decisions that Darren brought up there earlier in the segment. How much blame goes on Mike Vrabel and his staff for the loss yesterday? We'll discuss that when we come back. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, Mike, the decision to punt on fourth and two at the beginning of the fourth quarter, can you kind of walk us through your thought process on that?
No, just decided to punt. Thought we were playing well defensively, thought we would get a punt inside the 10 and, you know, be able to play the field position game. Had some time there that I felt like, you know, we could, and we held them to a field goal. It just, you know, I mean, we were playing against a kicker there that, you know, kicks them from the 40, becomes a field position battle, and I thought that, you know, we'd get a stop and pin them inside the 10. And, you know, the way we were playing defensively, I was really proud of those guys that, you know, I mean, obviously Lamar had a fantastic day, but I thought we were, you know, dialed in. I thought, you know, enjoyed watching those guys play defense. What was I thinking?
That was Titans head coach Mike Vrabel breaking down the decision made yesterday in the fourth quarter to punt from the Baltimore 40-yard line on fourth and two. And, Joe, obviously, that's been a hugely controversial decision. Right when it happened yesterday and in the aftermath of the game, the 20-13 loss for the Titans against the Ravens. And, I mean, your offense has been struggling all day long. It's been a challenge just to get into plus territory, to have a threat to score. And you start that drive off, Joe, and Derrick Henry runs the ball, an 8-yard run, and is one tackle, like he's one broken tackle away, I think, from maybe scoring on that play. It was by far the best run of the day for Derrick Henry, and it's second and two from the 40. You're feeling good. You throw the fade ball to A.J. Brown. It doesn't work out. It's third and two. Jonnu Smith just gets absolutely drilled on that play right at the sticks and drops the ball. Deshaun Elliott comes in there like a missile and just nails Jonnu Smith on that play. And it's fourth and two from the 40-yard line. And Mike Vrabel makes the decision to punt. And we've talked about, you know, the Twitter accounts that have come up. Pro Football Reference says in that situation in the fourth quarter on that spot of the field, they don't have records in their database of anybody ever electing to punt with that situation in mind. What did you think of the decision, and how much do you think that was a part of why the Titans lost the game yesterday with the score being 17-13 at the time?
Well, look, I think from the Vrabel perspective, that was, you know, I hear what Darren's saying last segment, like kind of all over the map. But for the most part, if Vrabel has erred, he has erred on the side of aggression. And look, some of those, I think some like the fake, some, well, the Brett Kern double reverse.
Anyone?
Yeah, exactly. Well, it's the last chance to talk to Vrabel today for a while, so I got to get the shots in here. You know, he's had some of these kind of wacky things. For the most part, it's aggression has been the way he's gone. So this to me was the departure of, now it's, I guess that's not always good. I think back to last year when he decided to, hey, let's try Cairo Santos for a fourth miss from like 50 something rather than go for, it's not, but it's probably 90%. I would say he's erring on the side of aggression. Yesterday, I just think he got fooled by an admittedly good game by the defense. I mean, terrific job overall. They did more than you could have asked them, but you still know what they are. And you still know what your offense is. And even on a bad day for your offense, I'm saying, hey, I've seen these guys do it all year. Do it, guys. And they didn't do it. So it's just, that sequence is going to be, look, man, that when we 10 years from now, Titans and Ravens play again in the playoffs and we're rehashing all the road wins, everything, we'll talk about that sequence when we talk about this game. Just like you talk about, you know, Algie Crumpler or whatever else in previous incarnations of this. This will be remembered as part of it. By the way, real fast, I don't know, I retweeted this, but according to Schefter, so Arthur Smith interviewed last night with the Jags, which I'm sure just sounds great for Titans fans. It's like, hey, guys, I got to leave the facility. I got to interview with the Jaguars. I'm just kidding, of course. But today, Jets, Falcons, Chargers, Lions tomorrow. Busy times for Arthur Smith right now.
I love how the Lions are coming in last, even in the interviewing ranks. They can't get him there until Tuesday. I mean, we have gotten at least three or four questions on our text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com today about Arthur Smith and whether or not, you know, all this head coaching noise was a distraction. And I, you look, I don't really buy into that. These people have been able to multitask their entire lives, so I don't think that Arthur Smith just, you know, didn't game plan as hard as he normally would have, or, you know, didn't put the time in to get ready for the Ravens game. But it is interesting. I mean, you have a pretty pedestrian performance offensively, especially by the standards in place with this offense. You can't get Derrick Henry going. Ryan Tannehill doesn't have a great game. You're not able to figure really anything out to sustain drives offensively. And I thought Arthur Smith did have a very bad game yesterday against Baltimore. So I'm sure that when that news comes out with Schefter saying he interviewed with the Jags last night for their head coaching job, a lot of Titans fans not going to be very happy about that, even though I understand that's just how this business works.
Yeah, see, this is my mistake again. Like, I just continue to fail to understand Twitter and how you can make it worse for yourself by tweeting certain things. So Sam Smith tweets at me off that. Makes you wonder what he'd been working on all week, the interview or the game plan. So here's my – I'm going to give you a preview of my response to him on Twitter, okay? I'm going to say it on the air first.
Okay.
I hate this line of thinking. You know what Arthur Smith's best possible interview answer is? A great offensive performance yesterday, and he knows this. Now I'm hitting tweet. There you go. Big scoop for you.
Thank you.
Robbie, to get my tweet first. But, I mean, seriously, like, if you're Arthur Smith and you – oh, I really got to think of what I'm going to say to the Jags or the Falcons. Guess what they want to see? Your offense look awesome against the Ravens.
Yeah.
So, come on. And he knows this. It's just – it's. I understand the frustration. And I suppose, you know, some level of distractions possible. You know, at home, you're talking with your wife about, hey, you know, this team, that team, what might we be looking at? But I would be shocked if 1 second was taken away from the job Arthur Smith tried to do last week. He had a bad day calling plays, and that happens.
Let's revisit our poll question of the day at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. What was the most disappointing part of yesterday's Titans loss against the Ravens? Was it the fact that Derrick Henry was held to 40 rushing yards? Was it Ryan Tannehill's performance in the game? Was it the coaching decisions by Mike Vrabel and Arthur Smith? Or was it not being able to stop Lamar Jackson in the running game? Almost 400 votes so far in this poll. 49% going with the coaching decisions in the game. 33% going with Derrick Henry just being held to 40 rushing yards in the game. 13% going with not being able to stop Lamar Jackson on the ground, and only 5% going with Ryan Tannehill's performance in the game yesterday. And let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Steven from Hendersonville texts in and says, that was the worst coach game for Vrabel and Arthur Smith. Yesterday's coaching was a total summation of the offseason. Put forth your best effort, yet fall well short of your intended goal. What do you think about that being the worst coach game for Mike Vrabel and Arthur Smith yesterday against Baltimore?
Well, I guess you need to separate them. So I think that was that might have been Arthur Smith's worst day as Titans OC. Now, remember, he was OC still back last year when they were the worst O in the league. So yeah. I don't know if that was like a, you know, was that a worse day than like 16-0 at Denver when they could barely like get 4 yards on a given play. I mean, but certainly since this offense has become what it is, the Tannehill era of this offense, I think that was the worst day. Especially when you start out like that, when you have 83 yards in the last three quarters of a football game with this offense and what it has done in shattering records, being right there, you know, number one in scoring offense in the league right until the end. That's highly disappointing. I mean, Vrabel, if you're talking about overall with Vrabel, then you count the defense in there too. It was a good day for the defensive coaching, right? I mean, you have to give them credit for what they did. But obviously, when you go to that decision, the non-aggressive decision to trust your defense, that's, you know, that's a coach misunderstanding his own team, I think.
I think so, too. And, look, I agree. I think that was certainly since Ryan Tannehill has taken over as quarterback, I think that was Arthur Smith's worst day as offensive coordinator. And, obviously, the timing on that sucks. It could not be worse. But I don't think that that is some major indictment of Arthur Smith, and I don't think that the head coaching jobs, you know, just totally just brought his focus away from the game plan all week. Just knowing Arthur Smith, the way that we know him. So I know that narrative is going to be out there, but I just don't really buy into that. But it is going to be interesting to see what happens with Arthur Smith as we move forward here in the coming days and whether or not he lands a head coaching job. When we come back, where does this loss for the Titans rank in terms of all-time disappointments in the playoffs? We'll discuss that on the other side. But first, I've got a word from FanDuel, and Alabama and Ohio State in on the action tonight in the national championship game. And you can bet on Alabama versus Ohio State with an exclusive 25-1 odds boost on FanDuel Sportsbook. That's right, FanDuel Sportsbook giving new users an exclusive 25-1 odds boost on the biggest college football game of the year. And that means you can pick either Alabama or Ohio State to win, and then just bet $5 for a chance to win $125. FanDuel Sportsbook is America's number one sports betting site for a reason. They've got a simple, intuitive app that makes it easy to find the bet you're looking for and then lock it in. And unlike the other guys, once you win, FanDuel gets you your cash in as little as 24 hours because that's the right thing to do. And it's been so easy to use the FanDuel Sportsbook app. They've got a range of betting options like player props and futures. You can find whatever bet you're looking for on the FanDuel Sportsbook app. And right now, the right thing for you to do is to download the FanDuel Sportsbook app and use my promo code ROB, that's ROB, to take advantage of your exclusive 25-1 college football odds boost. Remember, that's FanDuel Sportsbook, promo code ROB. Must be 21 or older and present in Tennessee. New users only. Must wager on designated boost market. A deposit is required. A max bonus of $125. You can see full terms at sportsbook.fanduel.com. And for problem gambling support, call 1-800-889-9789. Preds fans, Smashville Live returns this Wednesday on 102.5 The Game. The show will air every Wednesday during the Preds season from 6 to 7 p.m. and will feature Preds players, former players, and other special guests. Something new this year, we're going virtual, so that means you can watch the show from the comforts of your own home via 102.5 The Game's Twitch, Facebook page, YouTube, and more. So be sure to join us every Wednesday from 6 to 7 p.m. this hockey season for Smashville Live, brought to you by New Amsterdam Vodka. Welcome back. Oh.
And the player guests for Smashville Live this week are Nick Cousins and Luke Cunnin. So two of the new faces for the Preds will be on Smashville Live this Wednesday.
A couple of newcomers getting in on the action on the first week of the regular season. So looking forward to that. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Breaking down the loss for the Titans yesterday against the Ravens and trying to determine where this loss ranks in terms of all-time disappointments in Titans playoff history. Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Chris in Nashville texts in and says, honestly, I'm not super disappointed. I think we all knew that this team was not a legitimate contender for the Super Bowl. And Joe, I'll be honest, that's been a lot of the reaction I've seen from Titans fans is, yeah, like, you don't want to lose, and obviously it sucks to lose to the Ravens. But a lot of Titans fans that I've seen online and on our text line have said that they kind of felt like this team, it was inevitable that they weren't going to make a deep run and they didn't have what it takes to truly compete for a Super Bowl. And that's been a lot of the reaction that we've seen so far today here on our show.
Yeah, I mean, it kind of goes along with way more angst around an 11-5 division winner than you might think, you know? But that's also what happens when you, one, just are really bad on one side of the ball, and two, are somewhat all over the place. Some really good performances this year, but obviously, I mean, last night I'm watching the Browns go up 28-0 on the Steelers right away. And I'm like, I've seen this before. The second half against the Colts, I mean, they've had the whole performance against the Packers. They've had some moments where they looked really bad. And as Corey Curtis pointed out earlier in the show, you're 5-0 and you end up 6-6. And even that 5-0, hey, good for you for making the clutch plays, you know, for Gostkowski making all those kicks in Minnesota and all the different things that you had to do for, you know, overtime against Houston, all these things. But, man, you easily could have been in a very different situation this year.
So, Ryan Porth, you've seen a lot of Titans football, and obviously there have been some disappointing finishes to a season, some disappointing playoff losses along the way. As we're one day removed now from the Ravens and the Titans, where does this rank for you in terms of all-time playoff disappointments for the Titans?
All right, so I have done the exercise of ranking the disappointments of playoff losses in their history.
Okay.
This ranks 7th on the list. I can give you 6 that would rank ahead of this one. Just in chronological order would be the Super Bowl loss against the Rams, the devastating 2000 loss against the Ravens at home, 0-2 against the Raiders in the AFC Championship game, 0-3 in New England in that bitterly cold game that they lost. 0-8, yeah, exactly. 0-8 against the Ravens when they shot themselves in the foot many times and lost that game. And then last year, the AFC Championship game in Kansas City. I would say all six of those are in a tier above this one, where the level of disappointment was clearly higher for me as a Titans fan than what it was yesterday.
Is that just based on your expectations for this team, knowing how imbalanced they were and how difficult it was going to be to match up against some of these other teams like Kansas City, like Buffalo defensively, based on what we had seen all season long?
Yes. Yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it, and it's the fact that it's the wild card round. If they had won this game and then moved on to play Buffalo next week and lost a heartbreaker there, then there would probably be more disappointment on my end. But it was the wild card round. It's not a game when you look back. Like, you look at all those playoff losses, the six that I rattled off ahead of the Titans Ravens yesterday, and then I would say 8 and 9 would be Titans Chargers in 07. Where I think Roydale Williams was like the only receiver the Titans had that day. And Titans Patriots in 2017 in the divisional round, I think, are a distant 8 and 9. I would say that there's not a whole lot that you're going to think back on 5 or 10 years from now and say, man, X happened in that game, and that still ticks me off. Right. Yes, the 4th and 2, but there's not the Aldry Crumpler fumble or the Drew Bennett drop or the fact that you were one win away from the Super Bowl in an AFC Championship game against the Raiders and the Chiefs,
or 1 yard short of a Super Bowl.
Exactly. Like, there's not something that you're going to look back on and just still be ticked off about 10 years from now, I don't think.
Yeah, I would agree.
Yeah, like
that.
So
go ahead, Joe.
Sorry, I was going to say, you got two categories. You got the you're so close to something special, so however it came about, like, it just hurts to get that close disappointment.
Right.
And then you have the just utterly shocked out of your mind disappointment, in particular the two previous Ravens losses. Like the Ravens last year, you know, that Ravens fans will always remember last year's game, not because there was one play or one fumble, but because they were 14-2 and they thought they were going to the Super Bowl and the Titans came in as a 6 and shocked them, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So two different kinds of disappointment, but both of them have to trump this one, I would think, and it seems that way. That seems to be the popular reaction.
Not even close. And when you also look back, when you shift to the other side of the table here for Ravens fans, last year was utter just disheartening disappointment, all that. But when you compare that to the wild card loss to the Titans at home in 03, when Gary Anderson had that field goal, that wasn't a great Ravens team that was bound to go to the Super Bowl.
Right.
But they had a 2,000-yard rusher. They won the division. They hosted a playoff game. But the Titans were just the better team that night. I would say kind of comparable yesterday. The Ravens were the better team, even though the Titans had that 2,000-yard rusher and won the division.
And I'll say this. I think the way that the game played out yesterday factors into this discussion as well, because I still believe – like, if the Titans lose that game yesterday and it's like 36-33, or the offense looks like it's looked for the majority of this year, I do still think that the factor of, man, did you just waste an all-time great offense? I think that plays into this discussion as well. I think the fact that the offense was as disappointing as it was yesterday just kind of leaves Titans fans throwing their hands up and saying, all right, I mean, this team just had no chance in the playoffs. So, you know, I think if the Ravens come out yesterday and they hang 45 on that Titans defense, it's easier to be upset because you knew it was coming with that defense, but it's also, man, this offense was so good. Is it ever going to get quite back to that level with who knows what the future looks like for Arthur Smith? Who knows if Corey Davis is going to be back or not next year? Jonnu Smith the same way. I think if you come out and you hang up 33 yesterday if you're the Titans and still lose, people are mad today just of how much of a waste that offense was.
Yeah, although this makes it more confounding, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does.
I mean, at least that's like the reliable thing you expected. You know, you want your team to be reliable. Like, I can count on this and count on that. With this team, you can count on good offense and bad defense. And then all of a sudden, they decide to just switch hats on the final day. So it made it a little bit confusing. Because, I mean, the one thing you could count on as a Titans fan. This offense is going to go out. Any defense you have in this league, it's still going to move the ball and score points, and it didn't yesterday. But and it's not like you're coming away like, oh, well, things are looking up for that defense. No need for changes. Brooks Reed, come on back, 15 sacks in 2021, you know? I mean, there's still all the issues on defense.
I wouldn't mind bringing back Brooks Reed, though, just on a depth contract, yeah. One-year deal. Let's see if he can kind of turn into the Correa of the pass rush and be a good backup.
I mean, he was a sack machine the last couple of weeks, Joe.
No, it's hey, it was a nice late-season pickup. For all the terrible pickups in the offseason, some of the kind of quick emergency backup pickups have been pretty good, and he's one of them.
When we come back, we'll look ahead to tonight's matchup in the national championship game between Alabama and Ohio State. What sort of a chance do we give Ohio State in this game? Can they beat Alabama and that offense that has been unstoppable all season long? We'll discuss that when we come back. Also, some breaking news that I think Predators fans will appreciate as well. All that coming up. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. We're going to get to the national championship game and that discussion here in just a second, but I do want to pass along some breaking news I think Nashville Predators fans will enjoy. Mike Milbury, very controversial analyst at NBC, or the NHL on NBC, apparently not coming back to NBC this year. This statement put out, quote, "We are grateful to Mike for all of his contributions to our coverage for 14 years, but he will not be returning to the NHL to announce with our team. We wish him well." So Mike Milbury, very controversial with his comments both on the ice and off the ice. If you think back to the bubble last year, got in trouble for comments about women. Quote, "Not even any women here to disrupt your concentration," which obviously a lot of people took issue with inside the bubble. We had Emily Proud on our show to discuss that from News 2 and just how insensitive those comments were. But Mike Milbury was pretty universally disliked on the broadcast, and now, Joe, he will not be coming back to the NHL on NBC this year.
Yeah, he was adult. he won't really be missed much. You know, and I'll give Milbury credit. He, you know, when he made some dumb comments about PK Subban during the – I don't remember if it was during the Stanley Cup Final or during the playoffs, during close to it in 17. Hey, I give him credit. I got him on the phone, and he tried to explain himself. And, like, I think there's something to be said for that because a lot of people wouldn't do that. So I appreciated that, but I didn't appreciate his commentary. I just didn't think he was a very good analyst. And yeah, he said some things that were, you know, were ridiculous, like Cro-Magnon comments here and there. But I just think he was out of touch. I just think you can do a lot better than that. And you know, I don't know. So I guess sometimes guys like that appeal to a certain segment of the audience, but I just didn't think Milbury really brought too much to the table to offset some of his dumb stuff.
NBC's hockey coverage just got better. Leave it at that.
Yeah, I would say that is absolutely the case. So we wish Mike Milbury the best in his future endeavors and are very glad we don't have to watch him on television anymore. Joe, looking ahead to the national championship game tonight, I'm looking at the FanDuel Sportsbook right now. Alabama, an 8.5-point favorite in this game against Ohio State. By the way, you can hear the national championship game tonight, both on ESPN 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9, kickoff right around 7 o'clock. So make sure you're tuning in for that. But, Joe, as you look at this matchup, you look at this game with how dominant Alabama's offense has been all season long, what kind of a chance do you give Ohio State in this game? I know you think back to Pigskin Pick'em. You got Alabama covering and I think winning the game outright. So are you standing by that here on Monday morning, the morning of the national championship game?
I got to stand by it. I've had a bad Pigskin Pick'em weekend. But, yeah, look, I think this is – maybe it's wishful thinking, but I think we got ourselves a really good game here tonight. Now, the Jalen Waddle thing's interesting. You know, you add him to that Alabama offense, and it's just – it's already unfair. And then you add him – but that's what they were, you know, obviously before he got hurt. I just think Ohio State, this reminds me a little bit of the team that won it. They beat Alabama then. You know, everybody said they didn't belong. Then they just thump Alabama with Ezekiel Elliott kind of – everybody's like, wait, who is this Ezekiel Elliott? I tell you what, Trey Sermon, whew, boy, has he been on a tear the last two games. And I think that's the key for Ohio State. I think Trey Sermon can run wild on Alabama tonight.
Yeah, and I think that's going to have to be the formula. Like, if Ohio State's going to win this game and Justin Fields dealing with the rib injury and just – How well he played in the last game. You know, he could replicate that again, but I think it's going to be very difficult to replicate that type of performance against Alabama. But I agree. I mean, Sermon has an opportunity, number one, to run wild on this Alabama defense, but number two, to control the clock and keep Alabama's offense off the field. To me, that's the formula for Ohio State in this game. And Jalen Waddle, like you said, for Alabama, an outstanding wide receiver. He's listed as a game-time decision in this game. All indications to me are he's going to play. I think Jalen Waddle is going to play in this game. I think Jalen Waddle is going to be effective in this game. So an Alabama offense that's already pretty unstoppable just got even better if he's able to play tonight and be a part of things out there on the field. So if you're Ohio State, the game plan has got to be control the clock, run the ball, eat up some time, and keep that Alabama offense off the field, because if they're back to full strength offensively, I don't know if there's a defense in the country that can truly stop them.
Right. Like the two stunning things from the semifinal, one was obviously Justin Fields, those deep shots. I mean, some of the throws he made in that game were number one overall pick throws. That's got to happen again. He's got to make big-time throws. And like you said, I mean, how's he feeling with the rib? Has this been enough time to rest for him? He probably isn't going to be the running threat that he would be if totally healthy. The other stunning thing was Ohio State's defensive line, four-man rush at times against Trevor Lawrence, they were all over him. And that is – see, that's going to be harder to me to replicate, because Alabama's offensive line, I think, is the best in the country. That's going to be strength against strength, and it's a bunch of draft picks smashing into each other. And – you know, Ohio State's got to find a way to disrupt Mac Jones. He has been so able to sit in clean pockets and just, you know, just zip the ball around the field all year. So little pressure on him. Every time I've watched Alabama, it's remarkable. And that somehow has got to be altered tonight by the Buckeyes.
So what do you think from a national perspective of this game and just the interest level? I'm looking forward to it. I think it's a great matchup. I mean, obviously the talent on both teams is undeniable, but you're talking about two teams that seem like they're in the playoff every single year. Obviously Alabama's had a ton of success under Nick Saban, although it's a new coaching staff now under Ryan Day at Ohio State. Still a lot of recent success for Ohio State. What do you think the national interest is like in this game between Alabama and Ohio State? And do you think we've gotten to the point, or at least getting to the point, where there's fatigue with these three programs that we talk about all the time in Alabama, Ohio State, and Clemson?
Yeah, it's a good question, because certainly there's fatigue. But like, this is the way I look at it. Like, gosh, I'm sick of the same teams every year. And then I'm like, boy, I can't wait to watch them play each other, though. You know, yeah. Like when the actual games come, like, yeah, this is the game we want to watch. Hey, at least it's two teams that weren't in the championship game a year ago, right? It was Clemson, LSU last year. You got two different teams. I feel like if you love college football, great college football, how do you not want to watch this game? And it looks like it could be more interesting after what Ohio State did against Clemson. Then how do you compare that with also the, like you said, just the overall fatigue with the same old teams. It's going to be interesting. All I know is these are two huge name brands, and these teams alone bring big audiences, but I would think that the casual fan would be into this thing.
And the ratings, I mean, they seem to suggest that on TV. I mean, you think back to the Rose Bowl between Alabama and Notre Dame, 18.9 million viewers. The Sugar Bowl with Clemson and Ohio State, 19.1 million viewers. I mean, you're talking about the most highly rated games and sporting events across any network since the 2020 CFP championship game that's not an NFL game. So, I mean, the interest, as much as we talk about the fatigue and everybody talks about being tired of seeing the same teams in the playoffs, I'm sure that's the case with some people, but people continue to watch on television.
Yeah, and once again, all the highest rated television programs in a given year basically are football games.
Yeah.
So something to keep in mind there too.
So, Lyle, we're going to put you on the spot. As you look ahead to this game, as you forecast what the formula has to look like for Ohio State, who wins this game and what is the final score tonight in the national championship game, Joe Rexroad?
We called for a shootout all last week with Titans and Ravens, and they disappointed us, and they gave us another, 20-13 game. We are not going to be disappointed tonight. This is going to be up and down. I think both offenses are going to have big nights, and I think the Buckeyes are going to get a couple key sacks on Mac Jones, maybe a turnover in there. And Trey Sermon, I think, is going to do things that Alabama defense no back has done all year. And I'm going to go Buckeyes 38-37. How about that?
Ooh, says Joe Rexroad in his Buckeye underwear from the house. Ryan Porth, the over-under is at 74.5 for this game on the FanDuel Sportsbook for Ohio State and Alabama. Are you going over and or under? Well, the 74.5, and who wins this game?
I'm going under.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
I said last week that I felt like this was a matchup where if Ohio State can run the ball, like noted Ohio State fan Joe Rexroad is saying here in this segment, that Ohio State's going to be able to move the ball, maybe kill the clock a little bit and not let Alabama have the ball a lot in this game. I think Alabama wins a very, very close game. I think this is going to be an instant classic tonight.
I think it's going to be as well. I've got Alabama winning. The line right now is at 8.5. I took Alabama the other day when I think the line was 7.5. The 8.5 to me may make a difference. I don't know, but I think Alabama wins by a touchdown in this game. If Jalen Waddle's in there and he's anywhere close to playing at his top level, I just think they're going to win. I'll say Alabama wins this game 38-31 against Ohio State. That is my final decision on this game. So we'll see tonight, like you said,
that'd be a nice over-under total.
That would be a nice over-under total. You can see that game, obviously, on television, obviously hear that game here on ESPN 102.5, The Game, and ESPN 94.9 starting at 7 o'clock. We'll be back in the morning to discuss it and continue the discussion on the Titans. Darren Donick and Chase is coming up next. You're listening to ESPN 102.5, The Game.